I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
All right, good morning, and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock. This is your safe space if you're an independent thinker out there or want to be. This is today we'll have Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity in to update us on what's going on in the state legislature. Sounds like he's said he's had a kind of a calm week. I guess the bills are getting whittled down, so there's not as much activity as there is at the beginning when everybody's throwing stuff, like seeing what sticks against the wall. So, but we'll get updates on what looks like it will make it through the session, and hopefully Americans for Prosperity, their job is to try to lobby for anything that makes us more economically free here in this state. So hopefully we get some good things out of the legislature so Mississippi can move up the charts a little bit. He'll be in just a little while. And my quotes of the day today, leading into some kind of just interesting COVID news. I mean, we're getting a really good look at the consequences of the reaction to COVID. And it is not pretty, and I'll probably ask Stephen later if there's any – if there's anybody in the state capitol right now looking around and going, yeah, you know, we probably went a little overboard with this thing. I have my doubts that that's taking place, but we'll see. Quotes of the day today are Francis Bacon said, "The remedy is worse than the disease." And I believe that is exactly what we've seen. And then I ran across this, and it's almost a sad quote to me. This is Ron Paul. I want you to listen to this quote from Ron Paul. I was involved in the Ron Paul campaign in 2008. I was certainly cheering for him in 2012. This is Ron Paul, the Republican congressman from Texas, very libertarian guy. He's the one who really kind of changed my mind about a whole lot of things. He's got a great style. It's very unassuming. He's kind of a very mild man. Ron Paul's a statesman. You know, a lot of we love a flashy politician. We like to be sold something. Doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on, which candidate is the Republican Party, the Democrat Party. They like to package things and really massage the narrative around them, and you know, lots of flash. Americans like to be sold things. We don't like to really think about it too deeply. And Ron Paul's he's not the, you know, I always wondered what would happen if Ron Paul had Donald Trump's kind of, not his style, because that would have not been Ron Paul, but his kind of brashness, maybe a little bit of his loudness. But again, that might have ruined the Ron Paul message. But I want you to listen to this from Ron Paul and realize you were really about a hair's breadth away from this man becoming your president instead of Barack Obama. Because I believe that Ron Paul can appeal to common sense Democrats, a lot of the young people. Before young people really went hardcore social justice warrior, they were already kind of ticked off. They kind of saw what went on in previous generations, realized that things were kind of stacked up against them. Student loans were going up, cost of living was going up, housing was out of reach. So you had some kind of – Ron Paul was making tours of college campuses and drawing huge crowds. Ron Paul, I believe, went to the Google campus. Again, remember, this is 2008, before the social justice warriors decided that every single thing is racist. There are no sexes when you're born. You get to choose that when you're five. I mean, before the left really took this bizarre turn into insanity, Ron Paul went to the Google campus. And this was really back when Google wasn't the oppressive force it is now. It was kind of the Wild West frontier of internet search. And he drew big applause crowds at Google. I would imagine the people who applauded Ron Paul at Google either have been transformed into these bizarre left-wing zombies now, or they're long gone from the company, because the culture at Google right now would not be supportive of a Ron Paul who talks about personal freedom and freedom of speech, things like that. It wouldn't be very popular. But at the time, Ron Paul was drawing big crowds. He was winning online polls, and the Republican Party sabotaged his candidacy. And because I was involved in it, I heard a lot of the conversations. I was at places where you would hear the establishment Republicans types say things like, yeah, Ron Paul, he's got some good ideas. He wants to shrink the government. Yeah, we like some of his ideas. He just can't win. It was the strangest thing in the world. And so I would run into people who say, oh, yeah, I really love Ron Paul, but in the primary, I'm going to vote for John McCain because Ron Paul can't win. This was very successful strategy by the Republican Party to keep him out of the nomination, because you want to talk about, I know a lot of people think Trump was a disruptor to the system. Ron Paul would have been the real disruptor. Ron Paul, before he ran for president, was going after the Federal Reserve, which is really kind of it's like the mothership of globalism, of corporatism. He was going to the heart of the beast. Ron Paul would have been transformative. You want to talk about Donald Trump campaign in 2016 saying, oh, we need to get out of these endless wars. Ron Paul was well on the record voting against all of them and saying, we marched right in, we can march right out. You would have actually had the wars ending back in 2008 had Ron Paul become our president. It was a fascinating lesson in how dirty party politics is. And we've seen it in the Democrat side, too. But this is, as I read this quote to you and you think about the past year, think about the fact that this guy might have become president if the establishment Republican Party hadn't stood in his way. I believe he would have probably wiped the floor with Barack Obama in any kind of a debate. Ron Paul back in 2008, even more sharp than he is now. He's got a little stutter to him right now. He's definitely an older man. But here's his quote. Americans should pause and reflect on the lies they are being sold. Masks are just a form of psychological manipulation. Many reputable physicians and scientists have said they are worthless and potentially harmful. Lockdowns are meant to condition people to obey without question. A nation of people who just do what they are told by the quote-unquote experts without question is a nation ripe for a descent into total tyranny. Oh, we were so close. He actually believes the things that he says. So, unlike, and as I say, Ron Paul was a statesman. Even if you don't agree with him, you should applaud his level of honesty and consistency. He didn't twist his views to support a party or a politician. He stood to his guns. And I can guarantee you, had we had a Ron Paul president in 2020, we would not have had an emergency declaration across the country that led to mask mandates, lockdowns, school closings, church closings, and business restrictions and shutdowns. It would have been a totally different thing. It's just really a missed opportunity for America. But anyway, that's Ron Paul. I noticed in the news yesterday, several counties, I don't believe any of them here in central Mississippi, but I noticed several counties' announcement where they were closing their schools today because of the weather forecast. Did we ever do this before? I remember. I'm interested in severe weather. I think it's kind of exciting. A really dark day with clouds swirling and stuff. I find that just absolutely fascinating. I remember many days going to particularly Span Elementary. When I was at Span, just knowing that at some point during the day, we were going to be taken out into the hallway to, you know, assume the position. You sit on your butt, put your hand between your legs and your hands over the back of your head. You do the tornado drill. We knew that was going to happen at some point. It was actually kind of made it for exciting part of the day. Any day now, any minute now, we're going to get out of class. We're all going to get to go in the hallway and sit down for the tornadoes. But now based on a weather forecast of rain and hail, we are closing the schools. I'm looking out the WYAB studio windows right now, and it's just kind of faint sunshine, dry as a whistle. I don't know if this is different in any other parts of the state right now. Maybe there's some severe weather somewhere, but since when Since when do we cancel school? Of course, we've allowed them to install over the past year this switch to virtual learning. And so this switch, obviously, now we are learning, can be turned at any moment. The slightest inclement weather, and you just switch to virtual because everybody is geared up for it. Except for, and I don't know that if the authorities or the education establishment stops and thinks about this, except for the working parents of young children who suddenly, instead of going to school, are forced with staying home. How much disruption is this to working parents who now have to either make arrangements or they have to take a day off of work to stay home with their kids so they can Zoom call because it might rain today? You see where this is headed? Do you see how disruptive this is and the precedent that we have set with this? Not to mention the fact that each day that is taught on Zoom is one day kids learn a little bit less. And if we are now calling school because of a forecast, I don't know if the authorities in charge have ever noticed this before, but weather forecasts, not generally 100% accurate. Now, maybe at some point today, a tornado rips through a school that went to virtual learning today, and I look like a jackass. But the bottom line is, we have seemed to become this society that just is afraid of our own shadow at this point, and I fear where that is going to take us. When I come back, there's been some studies done that certainly Thomas Dobbs and Anthony Fauci and the rest of the busybodies out there need to take into consideration, because I'm going to ask Stephen Utroska about that. There's a lot of lessons that could have been learned from 2020, but the government always seems to learn the wrong lesson. They always seem to draw the wrong conclusion from any failures or successes of any operation. We're going to talk about some of the failures of what we've seen and the reaction from the Thomas Dobbs and the Anthony Faucis of the world. It was certainly predictable, but it's interesting to see the statistics. We'll do that when we come back. Stay with us.
If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at DanksMillerCorey.com.
I don't know if you were paying attention to what's going on in Europe right now, but they're seeing spikes. They're also announcing this. I saw headlines over half of states in the country right now. We're seeing rises in COVID cases. They're going to blame the lack of restrictions, these kinds of things. We know the game that's going on. I am wondering if people will lock down again. Would we go back into another situation? Would we take that? For the vast majority of people, I'm afraid we might. I ran across this story. This is on studyfinds.org. And the bottom line is, after the COVID restrictions, the jury seems to be in to me. Because there are control groups. South Dakota, Florida, and Sweden are control groups, meaning that they didn't take any restrictions. And then you compare them against the experiments they ran in New Jersey and New York and California, and then you compare. I mean, I think this is how evidence is studied, but I don't know that they're going to do that because they are really refusing to do it so far. This was in studyfinds.org. Modern medicine can do amazing things for even the most critically ill patient, but it can't do a thing if they don't seek treatment. More people are dying from heart and respiratory conditions which don't usually lead to death. And avoiding medical care may be why. Dr. Joseph Albert, editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Medicine, says the cause is simple: fear. His findings reveal more patients with serious illnesses are avoiding urgently needed care over concerns they'll contract COVID-19 in hospitals. Alpert says although he's seeing the same mix of non-COVID patients entering the hospitals, those with heart failure or COPD, these people are much sicker and close to death than in pre-pandemic days. And this is the statistic that will elude us. We will find out how many people tested positive. They'll give us the death counts of COVID. We will never actually get the weighing. We won't have, you know, we got two columns right now, cases and deaths, right? We won't get that third column, cases, deaths, and deaths from lockdown. Well, I'd throw four columns in there. I'd like to see the death from vaccine number in there too. But anyway, I'd like to see at least three columns that say cases, deaths, and then deaths from the reaction to the cases and the deaths in the first place. And if we ever got any honest accounting, I would imagine that we may actually come up with more deaths from the consequence. They talk about, I can't remember the statistic, 50,000 deaths per 1% in the unemployment rate. These are deaths of despair, people who lose health insurance and don't seek medical care. There's actually a formula for this. It's been widely known for quite a while. And when you look at it, we took an unemployment rate, as bogus as these numbers are, from 3.5% up to, you know, around 10%, back down now to somewhere in the sixes. But you're still talking about hundreds of thousands of people if that study that's been pretty well accepted for a long period of time. Obviously, when people lose jobs, all kinds of things happen. Like I said, for health insurance, just from stress response to these things. So I would imagine if we added that third column, so we have our cases, we've got our deaths from COVID, and then deaths from everything else. From this would include suicide, crime, and murders. I don't think it is a stretch to say that the rise that we've seen nationally in crime is a response to just the complete disruption of people's lives, that and the race hustling of the media and the mainstream politicians, these kinds of things too. So the thing is that governments don't seem to learn the right lessons from these things. And when I listened to Tate Reeves give his million vaccine victory speech the other day, I didn't hear anything from him that said, basically the message was, well, we didn't like going through what we went through, but we did what we had to do. That's not really encouraging to me, because that says that if we run into this again, if hospitalizations start to go up and we feel the hospitals are threatened, or all of the different justifications, that really that we just go back to doing what we did because we have to do it. I guess it's asking too much to get a politician to stand up and go, well, yeah, we suffered through this, what we did for COVID, but we've learned that really maybe we don't even have to do these things. We've looked at other states that have done less. And again, I give Tate Reeves credit. I was talking to a friend about this last night. I mean, Tate Reeves did pull us out of this. He made national news by taking away mask mandates, and they lumped us in with Texas, but Tate actually, I think Texas just got rid of their mask mandate yesterday. But I have a feeling that the actual response from government is not going to be, hey, we did too much. They're not going to look at the studyfinds.org article that I'm looking at that's going to show all of these excess deaths that we're going to have. And that's the thing that people will point to, too. In the end of coronavirus, they will just point you to, well, look at this. There's CDC numbers. Look at all the excess deaths. To all of you who think COVID wasn't a thing and it wasn't deadly, the problem is just the excess deaths numbers is going to include the suicides, the murders, the heart disease, the cancers, all of these things that were not treated during the hysteria surrounding coronavirus. And even for these sick people, had they gone and sought treatment, they might have gotten coronavirus. I can understand concern if you think there's a virus floating around, you don't want to be spending a lot of time in the hospital, particularly if you've got an underlying condition. But the bottom line is, you know, how long do you put off treatment for a disease that could kill you, you know, in the next couple of days in order to avoid a disease that may possibly put you in the hospital and kill you in a month? But your chances, I mean, if you've got heart disease and you've got a failing heart, that's pretty urgent. I got to say, that's pretty urgent. It's probably worth the risk of potentially getting a disease. And when you look at it again, even the statistics are showing it's only 10% of the United States has tested positive for COVID. And a very, very small percentage of the American population has died from it, even though the numbers, the net numbers are large as a percentage of Americans. So, you know, do you take a 10% chance of contracting COVID, and then you got a 10% chance of, if you contract it, that you'll actually have a poor outcome and land in the hospital? So that takes you to about a 1% chance. Do you actually put off treatment for heart disease, cancers, other serious diseases because of that 1% possibility of a bad outcome from a virus? Well, apparently that's what people have chosen to do. And the people that are going to the hospitals now are sicker than they've ever been. And as this doctor says, who did the study, closer to death. And so when the government looks at these things, will they take this into consideration? Or I am so afraid. And what we see, because Europe is doing this right now, and this has been the response has been across Western societies. And what governments are really terrible at doing, you see it in education. We just didn't do enough. We just didn't spend enough money. They won't look at the mechanism of the failures of the policies that may lead to poor education outcomes. They just say, well, we're just not doing enough. No Child Left Behind wasn't enough. We need to introduce Common Core. You know, they stack on bad policies on top of bad policies. And you're seeing Europe, too. Europe is jumping the gun to re-lock people down. The German people stood up to their president, Angela Merkel, and told her no. She tried to take Easter away from them. But our government is going to come to us because I've already heard this. A lot of the talking heads on TV saying, well, you know, if we had just locked down 2 weeks earlier, we would have saved, I don't remember what the number was, 50,000 lives. There's no possible way they could know that. But I have my spidey sense is going off that if we start to see any spikes, be it, you know, in the next few weeks, months, or if it is in the next fall, they will, the takeaway for most government people and bureaucrats will be, we just need to do a little bit more. We need to lock more people down. We need to classify less people as essential. We need to close the schools sooner. And they still, again, they won't look at all these knock-on effects that just keep rolling in. And one of them is heart disease, cancers, things like that that weren't treated. There's going to be a lot of deaths associated with that, a lot of premature deaths that are going to be associated with that that'll never be put into the calculation. All right, we come back. We'll have Stephen Utrosky in from Americans for Prosperity, get our legislative update. And I'm particularly interested to talk to him about guns. I don't know. So far, we haven't seen anything coming out of legislature to protect our Second Amendment, but they're sure making moves on it up in Washington, D.C. So we'll talk about that with him when we come back.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and we've got Stephen Utrosky in with us for the rest of today. Stephen is with Americans for Prosperity, who is, you know, the term lobbyist. Nobody really fond of that, but you have a unique organization. You actually lobby just for the people. You're kind of you're the closest thing you've got to a lobbyist for the people, because that's how you get things done. So you got to have somebody up there pressing the flesh and twisting arms and all that stuff. So Americans for Prosperity is up there trying to get freedom brought to Mississippi.
Yep, that's right. I consider myself a public interest lobbyist, not a special interest lobbyist.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm up at the Capitol, there would be 50 other lobbyists up there, and I'm one of probably three out of 50 that are actually looking to make sure we protect the public's interest in their freedom and liberty, and make sure that we're not passing crony capitalist bills that are only helping special interest, like most of the lobbyists that are up there. You know, they're up there for one reason, and right. that's to protect the people that they represent and they're paid by.
Right.
They don't necessarily care that if that hurts anybody else.
Who are the other two groups that are?
Yeah, so Mississippi Center for Public Policy, yeah. good organization. Jameson Taylor is their lobbyist who's up there fighting along my side. And then Empower Mississippi. Russell Tino is who was formerly with Americans for Prosperity. He's
right.
up there. So I would say our three organizations are kind of the Liberty Coalition at the Capitol, and we kind of all fight for different things. We have our niche issues that we work on, but we all work very closely with one another and do cross over and help one another on different bills.
Yeah, you would have thought. Was there ever a time? I mean, it seems like it's been co-opted for a while. I heard it mentioned yet, the ACLU. I mean, aren't they, doesn't it kind of feel like what they're supposed to be doing is these kinds of things, fighting for people's freedom according to the Constitution? But are they just hard left? Occasionally I hear something where they're really on the right side of things, but they certainly don't seem to be fighters for, you know, everyday people.
Sure, yeah. We have differences of opinion on many policy issues that ACLU is doing, but actually one of their former lobbyists that I worked with on several issues while he was at ACLU, he and I worked together on quite a few bills while he was there, and now he's a contract lobbyist, and he and I still work on a good bit of bills together. So we have differences of opinion, but occasionally we'll find ourselves on the same side as them and fight alongside them. You know, our mantra is we'll work with anybody to do good, no one to do harm.
Yeah.
So we'll align ourselves with ACLU every once in a while, but then again, we'll find ourselves on the opposite side of the table with them sometimes too. But yeah, they're you know, liberty is certainly in their name, but they don't fight for the same liberty issues we do.
Right. They seem to be relatively silent on a lot of the censorship issues. Occasionally, you know, and really I'm always kind of looking to defend them when I can, because occasionally they're on the right side of some issues, and they've been cast as just an entirely left-wing thing. I think a lot of conservatives and Republicans really just, you hear ACLU and it's just immediate, oh, that's just some radical left group. But they are on the right side of things, so there's this kernel of good in them. I am surprised by some of the positions they take that don't seem to make sense, but...
Yeah, they do stand up a lot of times for free speech issues. They stand up for religious liberty sometimes. You know, no matter what religion that may be, they'll stand up and fight for that. And then they certainly are on the side of like the marijuana, you know, medical marijuana here in Mississippi. They were supportive of that. So a lot of the liberty issues on those things, we do find them on the same side as us. But, you know, then they came out against, you know, quite a few things that we've been for. So either way, you know, they're not the organization that a lot of people paint them as, that, you know, just completely leftist organization or socialist organization. That's not the case.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I kind of teased it before we got into the break. I wanted to talk to you, and we've talked about it a little bit on guns stuff, just because we have got the perfect storm in Washington, D.C. I mean, we already had it. We had a Democrat House, a Democrat Senate, and a Democrat president, and then came in the last week two mass shootings, or to quote Dick Durbin, 27 mass shootings in the last 10 days. That's what he's – I think it's classified as anything more than four people shot, so every time – Chicago gangland violence erupts, they classify that as a mass shooting. Anyway, so these shootings come up, and so now they're really getting ramped up to do some gun control at the federal level. And I'm just wondering, while the legislature's still in session, is anybody piping up and saying, hey, not in Mississippi, guys?
Yeah, and we saw that coming. I mean, yeah. we knew that was coming sooner or later, that they were just going to wait for that one event to happen that they could highlight and then, you know, shove down gun control down our throats. But, yeah, you know, we talked about both Melanie Sojourner and Chris McDaniel, both very conservative, very liberty-minded senators that we have. They both introduced legislation early on in the session that would protect our Second Amendment rights, make us basically a sanctuary state for Second Amendment rights, that, you know, would not allow any state employee or law enforcement to be able to enforce any federal laws that the state deemed as unconstitutional or against our Second Amendment rights. Both of those bills died without even a mention in committee. But I will say, some shining light in it all is the House yesterday brought up a House Concurrent Resolution 23. And basically, a concurrent resolution is just really a statement. I mean, it doesn't have any power of law behind it. It's not, in the state code. It's basically just a statement that they can make, that the legislature can make. And this resolution was primarily authored by Dana Criswell. And if you know anything about him, you know anything that he does is certainly in line with liberty and freedom. And
is he the DeSoto County guy?
He is. Yeah, he's from DeSoto County. And then some of the additional authors on it were Chris Brown, who's from the Tupelo area. He's another good one. Dan Eubanks is from DeSoto area. Steve Hopkins is DeSoto. Brady Williamson. And a couple other guys, but all of those are part of the Freedom Caucus that's in the House here. The our state House representatives, they created the Freedom Caucus 2 years ago and have become to build that. And so this is one of their first kind of big legislations that they're backing as the Freedom Caucus, and it did pass the House yesterday. But what it does against House Concurrent Resolution 23. And it basically says that Mississippi is a sanctuary state for the entire Bill of Rights.
Yeah,
and it specifically in the resolution calls out, not the entire Bill of Rights, but it does call out the First Amendment and Second Amendment, those being most. I think in current times, those are the most at risk for being persecuted under the federal government.
But I like it's all of them, though, because we certainly know the Fourth Amendment seems to be on its way out these days.
Yep, that's right. And so basically this concurrent resolution just said that that the state believes in the Bill of Rights, and we believe in protecting the citizens of Mississippi. And it actually calls that we're under an emergency declaration because of our rights being trampled on by the federal government. And so, again, it doesn't really hold any power behind it as a law, but it does make a statement. And so glad to see that they're at least standing up and making that statement. Again, it did pass the House yesterday by vote, and so it will be sent over to the Senate. And so we can hope that the Senate will stand up and say that they'll protect Mississippians and the Bill of Rights no matter what the federal government does.
Why would that be controversial at all? I mean, that is the Bill of Rights is the governing law of the land, and we're just saying, hey, we're going with the current law of the land, which is the Bill of Rights that applies to all Americans. Why would that? I mean, this almost feels like it's dumb to do in its redundancy. But I'm not calling them dumb. I mean, I'm glad that they are actually saying it. We live in a country now where suddenly we have to go, oh, yeah, we need to remember we got this Bill of Rights thing. Why would anybody in the Senate, who votes against the Bill of Rights in Mississippi?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
Right? We'll find out when it goes to the Senate. But, we've seen a lot of things come out of the Senate this year, or better yet, things that haven't come out of the Senate this year that should have been easy to pass. We have a Republican supermajority in both chambers, the House and the Senate. And we'll talk about this a little bit later, but something happened on Monday regarding the income tax elimination bill. And, I mean, you have guys that, these are ran as conservatives, as Republicans, and you get up there and they can't even pass simple tax cuts or in this income tax case, even a tax swap.
Yeah.
You can't even get them to take the income tax, which is one of the worst forms of taxation. There's many bad forms of taxation. I'm not sure if there's a good form of taxation.
I was going to say all.
Yeah, but at least income tax is one of the worst. And so if nothing else, if you have the opportunity to swap that for consumption tax on the scale of liberty, that's a very small win, but it is a win. And we can't even get that done in the Senate. You got guys standing up and talking down about this that ran as conservative Republicans.
And will again.
And will again, yeah. So, I want to go into, when we have a a longer segment, maybe after the hour, we'll go into what exactly happened on Monday with the income tax bill in the Senate. But I did want to read this line. Back to your question, I don't know who would vote against this. You know, I don't know why anybody would not want to bring this up and make this statement. But this is one of the statements from the resolution. It says, whereas the state of Mississippi has the right to be free from the commanding hand of the state and federal government, to refuse to cooperate with state and federal government officials in response to unconstitutional state and federal government measures, and to proclaim a Bill of Rights sanctuary for law-abiding citizens in the state of Mississippi. So, I mean, that's very simple statement.
Yeah.
The entire resolution is 5 pages long. But that's, you know, that's the gut of it. I mean, they're basically just saying, hey, we believe in the Bill of Rights. That's what the founders gave us that protects our life, liberty, and property, and the pursuit of happiness. And you know, so why would anybody not stand up and say this? I don't know. It's a good question, but we'll find out when it goes to the Senate. And
okay, so if it went to the Senate, then let's just say that they passed it. So they just leave the legislative session would end. This statement would just still stand. What happens if Washington, D.C. gets some gun control put in? Now, I don't know we're not going to see any confiscation this year, I wouldn't imagine. And I'm not totally familiar with what they're trying to put through in D.C. But if it got to where laws came down on firearm ownership, would they come into special session? Would they just wait till next year? What would happen to protect Second Amendment rights in Mississippi?
Yeah, so this concurrent resolution would not necessarily solve anything or protect anything. It's just really a statement. But they could call a special session. To call a special session is up to the governor and the governor alone. He has that power to call the legislature back into a special session. So he can do that at any time. You can even call a special session inside of a normal session. So he could call today, even though we're in normal session, if you want to. And the governor, when he calls that special session, he gets to specifically designate what that special session is for. And so he can call them back and say, hey, here's your itinerary. You can only discuss, you know, protection of our Second Amendment rights and what we're going to do as a state to protect those. Or, you know, he could call them back for the income tax if that doesn't pass. That's, you know, kind of been talked about, something that he very well could and may do this year. If the legislature can't pass the income tax bill, call them back for a special session. Another thing that they've talked about this year, a special session could come up because of more money funneling down from the federal government through stimulus.
It's raining.
The states are going to get some of that money, and they have to decide how and where they're going to use that based on the guidelines that come from the feds with that. So that could be another special session he could call. So I feel pretty certain we'll probably see a special session this year. Usually that'll happen in the fall. So we'll see if it happens. But if we see something between now and then that the federal government comes down, I would say that the citizens of Mississippi should reach out to the governor and tell him to do that. You know,
would Tate Reeves or Lynn Fitch, Attorney General, would they have the ability to step in and say, we're not going to enforce certain new federal laws, or does it have to come from legislature?
Yeah, I think the AG could certainly file suit against the federal government,
right.
And she has done that already this year several times for infringements. And usually the way they do that is there will be other states that kind of coalition together, and a bunch of AGs will come together and file a lawsuit against the federal government, so that she could do it on that front. I think for us to see any real action on the ground, that would require the governor and the legislature to do something.
Yeah, well, I feel like we're pretty safe in Mississippi, but you just never know. So, you know, other states are already taking action on this. I'm a little surprised they didn't do something during this legislative session. But anyway, all right, we'll finish that up when we come back. And then for next hour, we're talking to Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity, getting our legislative update for the week. Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great-tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
right into this world all alone. God takes your soul.
All right, we're talking to Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity. You know, you talked about them doing this this statement on that we actually abide by the Bill of Rights here. We recognize the Bill of Rights in Mississippi. And this is from this Freedom Caucus that's there. Would that apply to would that restrain Tate Reeves from putting out statewide mandates that require restaurants to go to 25% capacity or curfews, these kinds of – and again, I know that it has no teeth in it right now, but I guess kind of within the, we started talking about this in the Second Amendment, the guys in the Freedom Caucus, are they aware of this idea that maybe Mississippians should not be, did you hear that George Flags, I don't know, this before, maybe after last time, George Flags rolled out a 7:30 p.m. to 7:30 a.m. curfew for kids 17 and under in Vicksburg. I mean, I just can't understand how he gets away with that, but you know, I would like to see some statement that strips our own people here, too, because there's a lot of tyranny coming from Washington, D.C., particularly when it comes to guns and what we're going to see out of this gun control push. But, boy, the local and state people around the country have gone buck wild, too, so we got to stand up to them.
Yeah, I don't think that this statement, the concurrent resolution, would do anything for that. And then even if they passed a law, the issue with it is that there's court cases all over the country right now that are going to test the constitutionality of those, and I'm not real optimistic that the courts will rule in the people's favor. I think that there's precedent, and you know, precedent kills so much. You know, if you do the wrong thing and the bad thing so much that people believe it's the right thing, then when you take it to court, all of a sudden there's precedent for years and years of them doing the wrong thing. And the courts won't rule it down because it's been done so much. So,
well, we just live in the society now where everything's an emergency. And it's like as soon as they say that word emergency and issue an emergency declaration, it happened after 9/11. I think we're still under an emergency declaration after 9/11. As soon as somebody says emergency, it's like the Bill of Rights is just wadded up and thrown away because they've got this special circumstance. But we just go from emergency to emergency to emergency. So that essentially nullifies the Bill of Rights altogether if they have that power.
Yep, that's right. Yep. So another thing I want to mention quickly before we get to the break is that there's actually a Supreme Court case right now, red flag laws.
Yeah, I have that
and
here.
So,
yesterday, I think they were supposed to hear
arguments.
That's
right. So hopefully they will rule in favor of that to say that law enforcement cannot come into your home with no warrant and no reasonable cause and take your firearms from you. But that's up to the Supreme Court right now. So I'm hoping they will uphold the Second Amendment rights of people and throw
we'll
that
see if
out.
Trump's picks paid off at all. They haven't yet. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We've got Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity in with us today to catch up on the legislature. I don't know if you were driving in, if you heard what I was talking about, but I'm looking past Stephen out the big picturesque window into beautiful Flora, Mississippi, and it's just cloudy out there. Did you see that several counties around the state canceled school today?
Yep, I saw that. Well, and back when we, you know, when we had some snow, a couple weeks ago, before the first snowflake even hit the ground, there was a bunch of schools that closed for a week.
Well, they've been doing that. I've noticed that kind of what I would call radio-friendly sissification of us for a few years, because I've had kids that have been going to school and they do that the night before. You know, when I was a kid, you woke up, you looked out your window immediately and then you sat by the radio or watched the TV and waited for your school to scroll. But now if there's a threat of snow, they'll cancel the night before. I thought that was a little crazy. Now that they have rolled out this virtual learning where they can just flick a switch and make everybody school from home, I mean, there is just no telling how many times they're going to cancel schools. And this is terrible for working parents who, you know, they've got a job to do, and suddenly, boom, one parent's got to stay home with, you know, with the kids for schooling.
Yep, yep. So, you know, my wife and I have two young children, and for the first, you know, 2 years, my children are a year apart. So when my son was two and my daughter was one, we decided to take them out of daycare. We actually had them in daycare. Both my wife and I were working. And the daycare goes with the local school. So whatever the public school system says, they would do it. And this was, you know, this was 2 years ago now, where it was, it just seemed like almost every week they were shutting down for some reason. My wife was having to call into work and say, yeah, hey, I can't come into work because I got to stay home with my kids. After they did that, you know, over and over and over, we finally said, look, this isn't even worth it anymore.
Right,
why have our kids in daycare if they're just going to shut them down? You know, and like I said, this was before COVID, you know, and they were still doing that. So I think it's only gotten worse since COVID,
right,
since they're all online.
Well, now they've just got this tool where they feel, as educators, see, they won't have to take, you know, don't have to have any makeup days now. You know, at least there was that little thing where they went, well, if we close school now, we're going to have to stay a little bit later in May and all that other stuff. Now they just say, oh, everybody stay home. We'll just do it from there. And I don't think they're thinking about the working parents. But the biggest problem I have with it is just, well, this hyper safety thing. You know, it doesn't matter if it's gun control, COVID, storms, everything. We have just gotten to this hyper state of fear and trying to mitigate every single issue. If there's, and I don't know if this comes from the legal climate, if everybody's scared they're going to get sued, or if it is really just this idea that we are going to disrupt our lives if there's any possible risk out there. You know, it just, I see this as a bad trend.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you know, you see a lot of us, Mississippi hasn't gone this far yet, but you see a lot of states, especially states like California and New York, to where they still haven't been back in person.
Still.
And the teachers' unions are coming out and saying, no, it's not safe. We shouldn't send anybody back to school. Let's not do it. And so they're going to go, we're going to see it. They're going to go years without ever stepping a foot in the classroom. And can you imagine what that's going to do to the children?
Oh, yeah.
Who are not on, look, they, you know, they, from a very young age, there's been tons of studies to say, don't put your kid in front of a screen. Like, that's the worst thing you can
absolutely
do, is putting your kid in front of
for
a screen.
Even for their eyes,
yep,
for their brain, for their social
everything.
Skills.
That's
everything.
That's right.
And
their
sleep.
And now all of a sudden we're saying, hey, put your kid in front of a screen for 8 hours a day because that's the, you know, he's got to get schooled, right?
Right.
You know, and schools are closed, so the best thing you can do is put him in front of a screen. But, you know, before this, there was never a study that said that was a good idea. You know, everybody said how detrimental that is to your kid, not only physically, but, you know, their mental capacity, them learning, you know, them developing, their brain. It's just a terrible idea. But now we've bought into it. We feared this, this virus that's not even detrimental to children. You want to talk about 10% of 10%, you know, that's for older adults.
Right.
You know, for children, it's such a small, insignificant
amount. It's statistically zero.
Yeah. And so, you know, now though, we're doing such a great harm, I think, to this generation of kids by putting them in front of a screen, telling them to watch this pre-recorded video that your teacher's doing or whatever. And the United States is already behind the rest of the world in education, you know, for our children. Mississippi is, you know, the last in line for the United States. And so I'm glad that we're getting our kids back somewhat in the classroom, you know, here in Mississippi, but man, it's been such a detriment. I mean, fair to say that, you know, most of our children are a year behind now.
Yeah.
You know, in their development.
Well, they showed that. I mean, they've looked at the average test scores after the past year for people that did remote learning. It was significant drops in their scores on testing and stuff. And, yeah, this is a giant science experiment. But, again, it gets back to – and I guess we'll touch on this and then we'll get into legislative stuff after the break. But we have singularly focused on this teeny tiny particle called a virus to the exclusion of everything else. I mean, everything else, schooling, social, just the mental health of senior citizens who have been isolated. And it is terrible for somebody who is approaching dementia or having some, you know, an older brain to suddenly be isolated. I mean, I've heard stories from people. Luckily, my father, who was elderly, he passed away, but he was at home. But, you know, there are people in senior citizens' home that have not seen another human being outside of an attending nurse, except maybe through a window on a cell phone. You know what I mean? So yep. This and so I guess the question I would have for you in your position is, if we see another spike now, is there anything legislatively, are there any leaders in Mississippi that are saying this was a failure, we can't do this again, the deaths weren't so bad that we need to strip people of their livelihoods, their interactions, of their worship, of their businesses? Is there any appetite to undo that? Because I heard Tate Reeves give his victory speech on 100 doses, and it sounded to me like he thinks he did exactly what he needed to do, removed it at exactly the right time, and if faced with that, he would do exactly the same thing again. I didn't hear anything that said, well, we didn't know what we were dealing with. Now we know better. We're better suited to handle this. I just feel like we're going to do this again unless there's something in the state that says we are now going to be Florida or South Dakota. Any chance of that?
Yeah, I that's going to have to come from leadership at the top. Look, there's very few legislators out of 174, 52 senators and 122 House members. There's very few that are willing to stand up for anything.
Yeah.
Very few that are willing to stand up for anything. You know, so if we pass some legislation that would not allow us to continue to do what we did in the past in response to COVID, if we wanted to be like Florida or South Dakota and be open and free, it's going to have to come from leadership. Because I can tell you, out of 174 legislators, there's very few that are willing to stand up, especially if leadership says they want to shut it back down.
Yeah.
Well, so, and that's for anything.
I think Tate Reeves would get an earful from people, I would think. But you know what? I think I miss, what was that George Bush term? Misunderestimate. I think a lot of people have kind of enjoyed the pandemic. I think there have been so many people, particularly in a state that's poor like Mississippi, with all of the benefits, SNAP benefits have gone up. You got STEMIs, you got the boosted unemployment. I look out at the landscape and say, there's no way they would try this again because the people would rise up and say, no, you're not going to shut us down again. But there may be a preponderance of these populations that are saying, I don't know, kind of worked out pretty good for me. I don't have to go to work. I get to stay at home and work. I get a STEMI check every now and then. If I lose my job, I get, you know what I mean? There's so much stuff flowing out there that has made this very comfortable to people. Maybe people aren't really as opposed to it as I would think they are as a freedom-loving American.
Yeah, if you lose your job, you're actually going to make more.
Right.
Than you were.
And not have to go anywhere.
Yeah, not have to do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I hope that we won't get to that point. I think that Tate Reeves, I actually think that he has seen the detriment that some of his policies early on caused. But like you said, there's a lot of people that benefited from this and were $800 million over in revenues this year based on projections, you know, through the end of the fiscal year. So, I mean,
one of those precedents
I mean, you know, people lost their freedoms and liberty and the rights to do what they want to do as free citizens of these United States. But to the people who are in control, you know, for the people who run the government, it's not been a bad thing for them.
Well, it's like I was listening to a friend of mine play this on over the phone last night. We were listening to Joe Biden. I think he spoke yesterday and he's out trying to sell his stimulus. I don't know why he's selling it. It's already passed. The money is already, you know, headed out, but he's going around trying to sell his stimulus bill. And he said, this is it's great for the American people. I've had 430 mayors, both Republicans and Democrats, call me and tell me that they supported this bill. And I said, of course they do. You're flooding their communities with money. You know, so these politicians, of course they like, you know, this free, air quotes in the studio here, free money that's going out to everybody, but it is still, I mean, it is wildly detrimental. I would just like to hear Tate Reeves or Thomas Dobbs say, looks like we don't have to. I mean, he sat up there and did this 1 millionth vaccine champion speech or whatever, 3 weeks after the end of the mask mandates, as to cases and deaths, and the day that he spoke, deaths were zero, or the day before he spoke. What does that tell you that when you remove the mask mandate, that 3 weeks later you have zero deaths and hospitalizations were still going down? Because we're always told it's a 2-week lag. Go to a Super Bowl, 2 weeks later, super spreader spike in cases. You know, Well, in every state that's gotten rid of their mask mandates, cases and deaths are still going down. So I would just, it would just make me feel better if you would come out and go, looks like people who want a mask are masking, but it didn't have any effect on it. We'll never go back to that again.
Yeah. And I want to actually brings us to a good point about politicians, benefiting from this and, why they would not want to take action against this in the future. That'll lead us into the income tax and why a lot of people are against this income tax elimination, because, there's the potential they may have to cut something. Taxes, may have to cut something.
Yeah.
And so they put out a study committee, and we'll talk about after the break of who's on the study committee and why it's a terrible idea.
Oh, great. So it's not looking good for getting rid of the income tax in Mississippi.
Certainly not this year. And
what a whiff. We were so close just a couple of weeks ago. It felt so positive. All right. We're talking to Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity, about Mississippi legislator. We'll get into what's been going on this past week when we come back. Stay with us.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
All right, we are talking with Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity. So tell us where we are. We want to start on taxes. So.
Yeah, let's do the income tax. So we've been talking about that for about a month now. And, the speaker introduced a bill. We weren't necessarily, just gung-ho about his bill. There were several changes that we wanted to make to it. But every time I've talked about it, I want to continue to applaud the Speaker of the House and the House representatives for passing this bill, because it started the conversation.
Just to make sure everybody, this is to eliminate the state income tax, add some taxes to sales tax, drop taxes on groceries. So it was a stock swap, but it would get rid of the Mississippi income tax.
Right, that's right. And so we had some issues with that. I would certainly like to see an income tax elimination without a wholesale just swap. But that's the bill that we were presented with. So we had a couple of amendments that we were going to try to introduce in the Senate. But the Senate has no appetite to eliminate income tax in Mississippi. Delbert Hoseman made that apparent. Josh Harkins, the finance chairman in the Senate, has made that apparent that they have no intentions of bringing this bill up in the Senate. They killed the bill in the Senate without even a conversation.
He's Rankin County, that area.
Yep, so Josh Harkins is the senator for Rankin County. He is the finance chairman who this bill made it when it came out of the House, made it over into his committee, and he failed to even bring it up in committee to discuss.
If he had let it go, would it have passed in the Senate? I mean, is this guy going to be the reason, Delbert Hoseman and Harkins are going to be the reason we have a state income tax going forward, just the two of them?
Yeah, well, so what I would say is that, again, I had issues, Americans for Prosperity had issues with the bill. We wanted to see some amendments to it to make it a stronger and better bill. But unfortunately, no one had any chance to even talk about it in the Senate. It wasn't even brought up in the Senate. They had no desire to even open the discussion up about income tax elimination this year. And so, Josh Harkins, by the way, who made a D on our scorecard last year, so any listeners that are out there in Rankin County, check that out and see where he, why he made a D on our scorecard, but didn't even want to bring it out of committee, didn't bring it up in committee to even talk about income tax elimination. So what they did was they killed it. The House did bring the bill back up. They threw it into a bond bill, but from what we're being told is it's probably going to die. So what the Senate did do, so that they didn't look completely unconservative or un-Republican is they put out a study committee bill. And so that was brought up on the Senate floor on Monday, and there was a pretty big discussion over that bill. And basically what they're saying is, you know, as good conservatives, we can't just rush into eliminating taxes, right?
I mean, they're so fiscally responsible.
I know that that's part of a plank, a tenet of our Republican Party platform, but we can't just rush into doing things like that. So we've got to study this. So let's kick this can down the road and study it some more.
Hasn't this idea of getting rid of the income tax been around for many, many, many years? It just finally got Tate Reeves and Philip Gunn on board to actually put it out there, but this isn't like a new concept and the first time anybody's ever talked about it. So they've really had a long time that they could have studied this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah. And so Chris McDaniel got up and spent 30 minutes on the floor discussing this, about basically saying, hey, look, we're the upper chamber. The Senate is the upper chamber, you know, and we're relying on the House to introduce legislation, and then we're not even going to talk about it. You know, we're the upper chamber. We should be the leadership in the legislature. We should be the ones pushing for this. We should be the ones coming out with this legislation. And if we don't like what the House is doing, we should amend it. But we're not even doing that. So McDaniel gave, look, all of the floor action is on YouTube. You can go on YouTube and just search Mississippi Legislature. Go look at Monday and watch the floor. I mean, you know, so it started at 4 o'clock on Monday afternoon, and so you can go look on YouTube and look up the McDaniel speech on it. But basically, there was two other senators, freshman senators, Daniel Sparks and Jeremy England, that stood up and basically, you know, talked back to McDaniel about this and said, look, well, we're just freshmen. You know, I know that this has been a long fight. I know that, you know, you guys have been talking about this for 10 years, but, you know, we're freshmen up here. This is only our second year in. You know, we really need more time to study this.
And these are Republicans.
Republicans.
Republicans that are really standing in the way of eliminating taxation for working Mississippians.
Right, because we have to study it more.
Right.
We can't rush into tax cuts. We can't, because, you know, heaven forbid, if we cut a tax and that actually reduced our revenue that we had, so then we were going to have to make cuts in government spending.
Well, what's so disgusting is this conversation is, this may be the easiest year to ever have had this conversation, because the state's getting this windfall from federal stimmies that are floating around, and the extra, how much?
Yeah, so the projections are we'll be $800 million over. Now, about $230 of that was delayed taxes from last year. So you take that out, we're still, you know, $570 million over last year's revenue. So
which was anticipated to be like 90?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was originally
so almost five to six times what they thought they were going to come in, but they need to study this for another year to make sure they don't poke any holes in the budget.
Right. Oh, and so the McDaniel amendment, what it would have done is basically would have changed the entire bill from being a tax swap to just a step down to allow economic growth to eliminate the income tax and not have to raise taxes on everybody on, you know, consumption tax. So with his bill, it had, you know, revenue triggers in it, so it only would have allowed, you know, the cuts if the revenue is there. But look, this is year one. You know, we're $570 million over, so that would have been the first step down.
Right.
And let me tell you, because of the Democrats controlling Washington right now, we can go ahead and expect at least 4 years, you know, this year and three more ahead of us, where we'll probably see huge economic stimulus checks coming down.
Right.
We'll see boosts in revenue. So if we pass it this year right now, you know, within the next 4 years, we can make cuts. We could wholly cut out the 4% tax bracket. We could start stepping down the 5% tax bracket by half a percentage per year. And in 4 years, we could be down to 3.5% income tax. So you've almost cut it in half in 4 years. But now we're going to kick it down the road, right? We're going to kick this can down the road, study it some more. Oh, and I mentioned to you this off the air, but the study committee that they're proposing is four senators, four representatives, the state economist, and the head of the Department of Revenue. So you're bringing together 10 government employees who are paid by the government to study if we cut government revenue, how will that affect us?
Right. So that's basically kind of the Washington, D.C. comparison is we're opening an investigation.
That's right.
Just constantly, we're going to look into it. Just trust us, we're going to look into it with absolutely no intention of coming.
That's right.
The conclusion is already reached.
Yeah, and I'll tell you about our state economist. They put out a report based on some of the stipulations that were in the speaker's bill, you know, to say whether it would be a good thing or not. Our state economist put out a report, and then about three other groups put out a report. And out of the, you know, the four or five reports that have been out, the state economist report was the only one that said this wasn't a good idea.
What a shocker.
Yeah, that's right. What a shocker that the state economist would say this would be bad for the economy if you cut taxes. And, I mean, study after study, the Reagan cuts, the Trump tax cuts, every time Republicans on the federal level have cut taxes, it's always improved the economy.
Obviously,
you know, people have more money in their pocket.
Yeah.
People spend more money. You're just like the stimmies that have come down. People have more money in their pocket. People spend more money. We have higher state revenues.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if we just got to keep our own money? We didn't have to wait on stimmies. We didn't have to wait on these other things. Your checks just started magically going up. That you know, an extra $50 a week adds up over the course of a year. That is very stimulative. That's why they call these stimulus checks, because more money in your pocket stimulates an economy. So why politicians, and particularly these Republicans, because all of these Republicans you're naming, these two freshmen, Josh Harkins, Delbert Hoseman, they're all going to run again. They're all going to run as Republicans. They're all going to run on getting the government out of your lives and small limited government and lower taxes. They're going to run on all these things again, and the vast majority of people will not know that they simultaneously sabotaged when they had the opportunity to actually lower taxes.
Yeah, that's right. Look, I want to read this real quick before we go into a break. This is the party platform for the Mississippi Republican Party. It says, the Mississippi Republican Party fundamentally believes in conservative principles of individual freedom, personal responsibility, free market economic policies, and a society that respects our God-given rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Wow.
Those are their tenets.
Yeah.
You know, and that's on their, you know, that's on the Mississippi Republican Party website. That's what they say. And then if you go further down into taxes, they say they believe that people, not the government, know how best to spend their own money. We believe our tax burden is too high, our code, tax code is too complicated, and our tax system is inefficient. So they want to give people money back to their pockets. But
when they had the chance to do that,
we got to study this.
Right. When they had the chance to do it, like within weeks of right now, they could have finished that up, and they won't do it. Well, I just hope people will remember this. We need to. I like the name and shame. It's the only way to hold these people accountable. All right, we'll get to more legislative action. We come back talking to Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a Complete Flag Source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a Complete Flag Source has all of the right brackets. Visit a Complete Flag Source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
All right, we are back with Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity, talking about Mississippi legislature. All right, so what else is going on right now?
Yeah, so good news is, I've talked about this last couple weeks, but there's a universal reciprocity licensing bill that made it through both chambers and is on the governor's desk, and he is set to sign it today. So he has said that he will sign it, and basically what the bill does, which will soon become law, it allows people who have professional licenses outside of Mississippi, if they're in another state and they have a license, and they move to Mississippi, they actually get residence here in Mississippi. This law would now make it so that the 66 licensing boards that we have, which I think the number is somewhere around 85% of the workforce in Mississippi has to have some kind of a license.
Golly, that's horrible.
But yeah, but it would allow those people, if they move into the state, to have a basically a shall issue permit to be able to get that license. So if you're a hairdresser, you know, got a cosmetology license in Alabama and come over here to Mississippi, they can't deny you that. They have to give it to you. So it just allows an easier process for people who move to Mississippi to keep working and doing the things they've been doing. And I use that cosmetology license as an example because there was a story not long ago. I think Mississippi Center for Public Policy issued the story, but it was about a cosmetologist out of Alabama, had like 15 years experience. Her husband got a job here in Mississippi, so they moved over to Mississippi. She thought, oh, no problem. I'll, you know, transfer my license to the cosmetology board here and keep working, doing the same thing I've been doing.
The beauty of that kind of training is that you can work from anywhere in the country. Yeah. You just set up shop.
That's right. Well, our board requires 100 hours more of training.
Yeah.
And so where she'd been doing this for 15 years, they said, well, you know, actually our license requires 100 hours more of training, so you're going to have to go back to school to do this. And she said, no, I'm not. Why would I go back to school and have to pay somebody to train me on 100 hours more of something I've done for 15 years? So this would you know, do away with all that, you know, make sure the people who want to work, who have a license, have experience doing this in another state, can come here. So we're the ninth state in the U.S. to have this legislation. So we're, you know, kind of on the forefront of it. And for a state like Mississippi that has problems, you know, trying to get people to work, you know, and we license everything, this allows people to work. And so
the only exceptions to that we talked about are medical licenses and law licenses, because
specifically doctors. So only doctors, and then attorneys. And some of that makes sense. Now, there is a provision in it that if your state has a state-specific test, and Mississippi also requires a state-specific test for that license, then you have to take the state-specific test. So, you know, a good example that I'm very familiar with is surveyors, land surveyors. The land surveying laws are very different from state to state, and especially when you go from Mississippi to Louisiana. And, you know, Louisiana has parishes and not counties, so their system varies a lot. So a license like that that has very specific state laws, they can require you to take that state-specific exam. But most don't. Most licenses don't require that, so most are a very easy process to transfer over. So, you know, for some people that doesn't mean anything, that, you know, this won't affect them at all, it won't matter at all. But for a lot of people who have licenses in other states that are looking to move to Mississippi, it will be a big deal for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're glad to see that. The Sudafed bill, we've talked about that. The governor's, you know, he has signed it now.
Just
so,
in time for allergy season as the pollen's coming down.
Well, don't get so gung-ho now. It doesn't start till January.
Oh, does it not? Okay.
So,
of course.
I talked about before one of the pharmaceutical lobbyists who is actually, you know, he and I were teamed up on this bill. We worked on this bill together because they wanted that, because if they can get it, you know, easier to obtain, people are going to buy more of it. So they want to see this too. I asked him, you know, what the point of that was, you know, early on. Why are we doing this in January and not make it, you know, July? Like most laws go into effect in July that are passed, you know, that year will go into effect July 1st the same year. Because they're requiring a tracking system for it. So it's a behind-the-counter sales. So it's no prescription required anymore, but you can't just go grab it off the shelf. You have to get it behind the shelf. And because of that, the pharmacist now has to track it to make sure you're not buying a lot of it.
You can't just go into the store and buy it like we did for decades.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just love all of these things. It's like they take something away from you, and then they give it back with a bunch of strings. And it's just about everything. When I look at you know, our health outcomes, I believe we were healthier 50 years ago. We keep improving things as we get sicker. I mean, everything is just, they try to do a little bit more, try to get it, you know, insert themselves. If we can just, we'll do this and just go back to the way everything was 50 years ago, we'd be better off.
Right. Well, you know the point of this, the reason that they created this law to begin with to make it prescription only is because of the meth production, right? Well, now, I don't think that we've seen much of a decrease in the meth on the street.
Exactly, yeah.
But we're just now importing it from Mexico.
Right, at least, you know.
So the free market survives. You know, you ban it one way, they find a loophole, and they're bringing it from Mexico now. And actually, I heard a friend of mine told me, I was talking about this with some friends, and he said, well, you know, Sudafed is completely banned in Mexico.
Huh.
So we're now, you know, we're now getting meth imported from Mexico where Sudafed's completely banned and they're still getting it.
Yeah.
You know, so
war on drugs. What a colossal success.
Yeah. So, but for those of us who have seasonal allergies, who like to use Sudafed, we'll now at least be able to get it for, you know, our personal use. And that just has to be tracked. But because they have to have this new tracking system, they'll have to get that in place. Law enforcement will now have access to this tracking system.
Oh, good.
So that they can go in and see if you've bought too many, so they can, you know, show up unannounced and ask about your high Sudafed usage.
Yeah.
But that they have to have the systems in place. That's why they,
That's one of those things where I'm sure a lot of conservatives, and where I think the drug war has really eroded the liberty-minded conservatives' mind, because people will hear that and they'll go, well, we don't want them to start making crystal meth, so we think that's fine. Now, they would really be incensed about police intrusion in a lot of other areas, but everything's always with a little bit of an asterisk. Well, I mean, that's to keep us from, you know, people doing crystal meth, so it's okay that the police know what you get from a pharmacy. I mean, that should be none of their business. If they need to find people, you know, if they find crystal meth on the street and want to track it back to somebody who's manufacturing it, that's what the work of law enforcement is. It's not just to intrude into our lives to peek around and see if we can find somebody, and then maybe we find out that they're producing meth. You know what I mean? It's just backwards. And I think the drug war has really eroded personal freedom under that drug war, and a lot of conservatives have gone along with that.
Yeah, I tell you what, there's a lot of law enforcement who are long-term in law enforcement have now come out against the war on drugs because they see the detriment. They spent so many years in it,
yes,
under that mindset,
yep,
and now they've come out against it. There's actually a book that anybody that's interested in learning about the history and how the war on drugs started and, you know, Chasing the Scream.
It's a fantastic book. Fantastic, fantastic book called Chasing the Scream, Johann Hari.
And it's on Audible too. So
a great story too. It's very interesting.
Yeah. I often can't find time to sit down and read, but I can always find time when I'm driving to listen to things on audio. So Audible has a version of the book. Now I will preface it by saying Johann Hari is a British author. And so for some reason they thought that it'd be a good idea to have a British guy read the book for Audible.
Oh.
And so it's kind of, you know, for me it was a little bit annoying to listen to the, you know, British guy read the whole book, but great book, fantastic.
Well, if anybody's really interested, I always try to get people to read that book. I've tried to give it around the station here too. If you're really interested in it and you want the audiobook, I'll call you on the cell phone. I'll read it to you every single night. It is that good of a book. All right, well, speaking of that and the war on drugs and ridiculousness around that, let's take a break and then come back. I want to find out where we are with medical marijuana, if anything's moved on that. We're talking to Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity. We've got one more segment, so stay with us.
If you're considering renovations, remodels, or roofing, call on Tri-County Restoration. Do you have an insurance claim? We work with all insurance companies. Tri-County offers kitchen and bath remodels, wood floor refinishing, patio and sunroom additions, and is a GAF-certified roofing contractor. And Tri-County Restoration can handle new construction for that home you've always dreamed of. Call Tri-County Restoration, 601-856-2530, or visit our website, tcr.ms. That's tcr.ms.
All right, final segment here with Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity. I want to find out about the medical marijuana bill. The legislature is trying to pass this shadow bill where they get to control stuff and dole it out to their cronies. And instead of 65 that was passed by the people, where do we stand on that?
Yeah, so the bill right now is in conference. That conference is just where three representatives and three senators get together behind closed doors and discuss what they want to do with the bill. It's in Josh Harkin's hands on the Senate. He's the chairman supporting that. And then Nick Bain is on the House side as the chairman who's leading the House conferees. And so there's really not a whole lot to talk about yet. I don't think that they have met. There's nothing I've heard of that they indicated they have met to discuss that. I do know that on the House side, several representatives continue to say that the sentiment in the House is that they don't want to take up the bill. Becky Curry as representative. She was the one that introduced the professional licensing bill that we just talked about. So she is, for the most part, like-minded, a kind of a liberty-minded conservative, I'd say, on most things. And she has, kind of taken up the fight in the House in support of trying to kill this bill, because it is, basically trying to counter 65, and it's full of cronyism. She did an interview the other day where she said, there's no appetite in the House for this bill. There's no reason for us to take this bill up. There's many issues with this bill, and the House wants to wait and see what the Supreme Court will do. There's no reason to pass this before that, and if something happens and 65 is struck down, then we can take this fight up next year.
Yeah.
So the House has made it pretty clear that they don't want this. Delbert Hoseman, on the other hand, has made it pretty clear that he does want this, medical marijuana bill.
Clear, Delbert Hoseman wants the crony version of it. I think it gets confusing when people listen to, and it even, I always have to kind of track it in my own brain. So you've got 65, which is what the people passed, that is set to become the law in Mississippi. Going into, just the next few months, licenses will be issued. The State Department of Health is working on the program. It is sailing along. It's challenged in the Supreme Court by Mayor Mary Hawkins in Madison, because she believes that she knows better than the rest of the people in Mississippi. Shame on you, Mayor Mary. I know a lot of people just love her because Madison's so pretty, but she has no business sticking her nose into this and thwarting the will of the Mississippian. Anyway, so we've got 65 chucking along. Delbert Hoseman wants this crony bill to be rolled out alongside 65, which sets up all kinds of ways to carve out for the big producers, like I said, the crony bill. So our hope is, my hope, your hope for American for Prosperity, we kill anything coming out of the legislature at all on medical marijuana and just wait. Hopefully the Supreme Court rules that the ballot initiative was sound, and then we just go into the fall with 65 as it stands, right?
Yeah, that's right. And the bill was originally introduced by Kevin Blackwell in the Senate, and it was very apparent early on that this was not a bill about the argument they were making is this is just in case 65 fails, that way we still have medical marijuana, the people have spoken, we want to support this. But it's very apparent based on the bill and the tactics that they were using that this was not about upholding the people's will in 65, that they wanted to put in crony stipulations in here to help their buddies and get this through. And so we have from the very beginning come out against this bill and hope to see it die a horrible death, which I think we will. Like I told you off air, the only way I can possibly see this medical marijuana bill passing is if Delbert Hoseman and the Speaker, Philip Gunn, make some kind of deal that, hey, you pass my income tax bill and I'll pass your medical marijuana bill. I don't see that happening. The Senate has so strongly come out against wanting to eliminate the income tax that I don't see them being able to turn around on that now. But I tell you what, it's a mess. And it's funny because one of the oath of offices that legislators take when they first get sworn in says that I will not swap bills. There's no
really?
Vote. If you vote for my bill, I'll vote for your bill.
And they do it every day.
In their oath of office, they take saying that they will not do that. That's not the role or the oath that you take as a legislator. That should not be your reason in voting for anything. You should vote for bills based on your principles, based on your constituency, what you think is best for your people, not. Because, hey, if I do this, if I scratch your back, you scratch mine.
Right.
But they do it every day.
Every single day. Well, that's interesting. We should be able to clean house and impeach a bunch of people. That you break your oath, there's got to be some consequence to that. Does it ever, we only got a couple minutes left, does it ever drive you nuts? Like you talk about, them trying to present this medical marijuana bill, the crony bill that they've introduced, and they sell it as this, well, we really want to make sure in case the Supreme Court. Does it ever drive you crazy when you know the motives behind it, but they get away in public with couching it as something altruistic?
Yeah.
That drives me nuts.
We talked about this, a couple of weeks ago when you played the Justin Amash audio tape about the interview he did about how, there's such theatrics in Washington, D.C. And I told you, if I didn't know who that was speaking, if I didn't know it was Amash and I didn't know what he was talking about, meaning D.C., I could have very easily thought that it was somebody talking about what's going on in Jackson.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's theatrics. They want to talk about, you know, oh, we're trying to, you know, we're doing this for the will of people, and, you know, much, you know, they're not.
We're gonna study the income tax thing, which really means have no intention of doing it. We're just gonna memory hole this thing.
That's right. I mean, Mike, what would happen if we cut taxes?
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden we didn't have the revenue for. I mean, think about the children.
Yeah,
think about our roads.
Yeah, you know? And this is Republicans saying this. That's the aggravating thing. But they will get away, all of them, with campaigning for conservative principles in Mississippi.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a mess down there. We'll keep at it. There is a light at the end of the tunnel, though. So we've got, you know, we're almost at the end of this week, and we have next week, and that is the last week of the legislative session. So most bills are in conference right now. We've got several other bills we're watching, alcohol freedom bills, trying to get the state out of the alcohol warehousing business, trying to get Uber drinks bills, what I've titled it, you know, allowing, you know, delivery for alcohol, and the distilleries, allowing them to be able to serve on site. And then there's a couple of telemedicine bills, you know, a couple of criminal justice reform bills that we're watching, but a lot still in conference. Out of our originally, we had 35 bills we were tracking. About 10 of those have passed. About 10 of those have died. And some of those were a good thing that they died. We were against them. But we've got about 15 bills we're still watching in conference, and it's all going to come to a close next week. So the official sine-die day is what they call it. Will be April 4th, which is Easter Sunday, I think. So we you know, certainly will see us out before then. But, you know, we could go through Saturday at midnight, I think, is a very real possibility.
Yeah.
So,
well, real quick, how do people track that stuff and keep up with Americans for Prosperity, see what bills are going, see if they need to take any action with their critters?
Yeah, sure. The best way to track us is go on Facebook, follow us on Facebook, Americans for Prosperity Mississippi, or you can do at AFPMS. Follow us there. It's the best way. We do weekly videos, updates, post things. That's the best way to track us, get in touch with us, reach out to us. But, man, looking forward to ending this session.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to see what ends up happening. Sounds like we got a couple of bright spots anyway. All right, that's all the time we got for today. Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity, and we'll have him back next week. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.